Morning. Interspecific relationships can result in a variety of outcomes depending on lots of factors, everything from species-specific traits to environmental characteristics. And, they may vary over space as well as over time. This morning, I'm going to be presenting some research that I conducted on how the nutrient status of ants affects the outcome of ant-lysinid interactions. Ant-lysinid interactions are not particularly well known, but they're ubiquitous in nature. Over half of species in the Lycaenidae have some kind of interaction with ants, and this occurs when they're either larvae or pupae. And considering that the Lycaenidae is probably the second largest butterfly family, depending on what gets included, this is a pretty substantial number of species that engage in these interactions. The interactions themselves range from facultative and diffuse to really obligate and specific, and within that entire range of specificity, the effects on the interacting species range from strong mutualism to antagonism, exemplified by some of the brood parasites among European blues that are brood parasites on host ant nests. But most of the relationships kind of fall in the middle, and they're generally considered to be facultative protective mutualisms. And in these associations, the ants will usually tend later instar lysinid larvae on the caterpillar's host plant. And the relationship is mediated by a number of specialized ant organs. This is the posterior dorsum of a lysinid larva related to the one that I'm going to study. And you can see in this picture there are eversible tentacle organs, which presumably release a volatile chemical communication to which the ants respond in a very characteristic way by rapidly antennating around these tentacles, as well as the dorsal nectary organ, which is surrounded by a glandular bodies called porcupola organs, and this is where the larvae actually secrete a sugar-rich substance that's an exocrine product as opposed to a waste product like honeydew from a lot of Hemiptera. And so the ants are lured in to the larvae by these volatile chemicals emitted by the tentacular organs. They're retained by the larvae through appeasement and provisioning of a sugar-rich solution that the ants readily accept. And in exchange, the ants protect the larvae from predators or parasitoids. At least, that's how the story goes. But really, there's a lot of different things that can affect this kind of relationship, including, as I mentioned before, environmental conditions, species-specific characteristics, which on the part of the butterfly might be things like mating strategy, voltinism, sex-specific traits, and for the ant may be things like nutritional status of the colony or nutritional needs, in addition to kind of general life history characteristics. So all of these things can affect the net effect of the interaction for both partners, and I like to think of these relationships as having some kind of feedback in the participation decisions by both interacting species. So if the ants aren't getting what they want, they may decide not to tend the larvae anymore. And if the lysinid larvae feel like they're giving too much, that the cost of provisioning ants is too great, or if they're not receiving adequate protection, they may also decide not to participate. And so most research that's been conducted on these relationships so far has looked at the fitness consequences for the butterfly. Most notably the protection against predators and parasitoids, but there may also be some effects that occur regardless of a predator situation, depending on the costs and benefits of the interaction with ants. But there's probably some kind of fitness consequences for the ants too, although of course most of the ants engaging in these relationships are have pretty wide range in diets. And over 15 years ago, Conrad Fiedler and Bert Holdobler noted that few studies have tried to assess the costs of myrmecophily for both the lysinid caterpillars and the ants. And I would submit to you that that is just as true today as it was then. So in my particular study, I'm asking two major questions. The first, what is the effect of ant nutritional status on the interaction type, that is, whether it's an antagonism or mutualism, and the frequency of tending lysinid larvae? And associated with this question, I came up with three hypotheses. One, that protein deficiency of the ants will result in higher frequency of predation. The ants don't have to tend the caterpillar. Maybe they could eat it if they were really hungry. Second hypothesis, that sugar deficiency will result in increased tending because the caterpillar is secreting the sugar its solution. And thirdly, that nutritional rewards from the larvae will compensate for resource scarcity experienced by the ants. My second major question is, how does variation in ant tending affect the performance of these lysinid larvae? So there may be some kind of variation in the number of ants tending due to the nutritional status, but why is this important for the outcome of the relationship? And I thought that increased ant tending would have a net negative effect on measures of larval performance in the absence of predators and parasitoids, because there's a cost associated with producing the sugar-rich solution. And secondly, I thought that the effects of ant tending on larvae may differ between sexes. And this was based partly on other research that's been done and some knowledge of the mating system of my particular study organisms. Speaking of which, the lysinid that I used in this research is the Serranus blue butterfly. It's this very common and widespread neotropical lysinid of probably questionable taxonomy. And the larvae feed on a variety of almost exclusively leguminous host plants. In north central Florida, where I conducted this work, they feed on Indigophora spicata, which interestingly enough is a Eurasian weed that grows in mowed and disturbed areas. And several people have noted that the larvae of Serranus blues have a facultative association with a variety of species of ants. And as a model ant in this study, I used Argentine ants, primarily because they're very easily maintained in captivity, and the super colony structure's really amenable to pulling out groups of workers or even queens and then reintegrating them at the end of an experiment, which is really nice for replication. And also, this is a good proxy for a lot of the ants that might naturally tend Serranus blue larvae. Argentine ants are known to tend a variety of honeydew-producing Hemiptera, sometimes much to the chagrin of people involved in agriculture, and they exhibit typical tending behavior toward lysinid larvae in the lab and the field. So I conducted a very preliminary ring study, and I'm not going to go into any detail on this at all, but I raised Serranus blue larvae with and without ants, and the most notable results of that study are that the presence of ants had a negative effect on pupil mass, and there were some sex effects, and namely that the males matured a little faster. And these results are consistent with protandry, again lending credence to the idea that there might be sex-specific effects on ant tending. And the lack of a strong ant effect suggests a pretty weak association, which we would have guessed by observing this species in the field. And there are no ant times sex interactions. All right, so in my main experiment, I set up 40 experimental colonies with 100 workers and one queen of the Argentine ant. In each of these colonies, I had two Hemiarius serranus larvae, and I replaced the host plant daily. I imposed on the ants four nutrition treatments, which were fully cross two-factor design of sugar and protein. And I measured the number of workers tending each larva daily. And at the end of the study, I measured a number of performance variables of both the larvae and the ants. For data analysis, I'm running out of time, so I did it right. I'd be happy to talk about it later. Going back to the main questions, so what is the effect of the ant nutritional status on the interaction type and frequency of tending? Well, the ants didn't kill any of the larvae. So there was no predation at all. With respect to the number of workers tending, I found that when the ants were deprived of sugar, they were much more likely to tend the larvae, and that this increased over time and as an interaction effect with time. And this is a significant difference. But there was this kind of oscillation every other day that I noticed in the raw data, and I can only think of one reason for that, and that was although I gave the caterpillars new food every day, I only collected it every other day and stored half of it in the refrigerator. And so it seemed likely that on every other day the food was a little worn out. And so when I included larval food quality into the model, it again improved model fit, resulting in a best fit model that the number of ants tending is a result of sugar times time interaction plus larval food quality, which is pretty interesting. The ants suffered quite a bit under the nutrient deprivation treatments. When I didn't give them sugar or protein, there were hardly any workers left at the end of the experiment. But those colonies that received some kind of sugar had pretty good survival. So, yeah. And other than the results I already discussed, the bonus was that the quality of Lysina larvae food influenced ant tending. So the second question is, how does variation in ant tending affect the performance of the larvae? So this is getting at the real guts of the question. These are the measures of larval performance that I recorded. There was no correlation among these response variables, and listed here are also the predictor variables, the sex, mean number of ants tending, number of ants remaining at end of study, nutritional treatment, the size of the mother, and I had some random variables as well that I put in some of the models. Only mother size was a significant predictor of age of pupation. And the effect size was that larvae pupated about a day earlier for every 1 millimeter increase in wing cord, which is pretty substantial. However, there is no effect on pupil mass of any of the predictor variables. And the pupil stage was slightly shorter with increased ant tending. I'm not sure what to say about that. In conclusion, the nutritional status of the ants can certainly influence this ant-lysinid interaction. Furthermore, variation of tending behavior of ants may have relatively few functional consequences for the larvae, and other environmental and maybe genetic factors might be more important for larval performance. And this probably suggests that conditional outcomes are probably pretty common in ant-lysinid interactions and other purportedly mutualistic relationships. Thanks.